Welcome back to the Darker Side Podcast. This is a podcast where we delve into the darker side of our existences. The morbid, the macabre, the spooky, and the absurd are all fair game as we discuss murder, UFOs, cryptids, creepypasta, and the paranormal. I'm your host, David Pottle, and as always, my co-host, Forrest Smith. How are you tonight, Forrest?
I'm pretty good. How about you, man?
I'm good. I'm excited that we're back doing this. That's what I'm all about.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, man, this is great. Good response from episode one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, people seem to like it. I'm glad. This is good.
Holy shit, yeah, fuck yeah, man.
All right, so, Forrest, we've got an interesting night tonight. We got some good topics, some good news stories. Got a decent creepy pasta that should creepy freaks out there. Welcome again, the Darker Side Podcast. So we're going to start off with our news stories here. I'm going to read the first one. This comes from the Boston Herald. It reads, cops, mom killed her two boys in a voodoo ritual.
Wow.
LaTarsha L. Sanders, 43, is arraigned in Brockton District Court on two counts of murder yesterday. A Brockton mother fatally stabbed her 8-year-old son 50 times with a kitchen knife as part of a voodoo ritual. 50 times for
50 times.
50 fucking times. Stabbed one of them with, you know, her oldest son, her 8-year-old son, 50 times with a kitchen knife as part of a voodoo ritual.
What?
Then went after her little, his little brother when she thought she had failed with the older child. Authorities said.
What?
So she stabbed her oldest son 50 times, and then she went after the little one because she thought she had failed in trying to reverse this apparent voodoo something. Let's see here. It says, LaTarsha L. Sanders told detectives it was because of the voodoo stuff, and it was part of the ritual. When asked in the hospital why she had stabbed her children, according to the police report, it came out wrong with the first one, and for the reason she had to move on to the second child, Assistant Plymouth District Attorney Jessica Kenny said in court, as Sanders was arraigned on two murder charges for the weekend killing of her two youngest children. She was ordered held without bail. I hope so.
Yeah, right.
Well, look, that's kind of nuts. You know, I just couldn't imagine having that, that's crazy.
Fucked up.
It's absolutely crazy. It's unbelievable that you could even consider doing this to your own children. I mean, voodoo is some crazy shit. If you've ever talked to anybody from Haiti or New Orleans or anybody who believes in the voodoo, they believe it. I mean, it's true.
I believe it.
You know, I mean, there are some crazy things out there in this world, and yeah, I mean, that's what's going to happen. You know, if you believe in something, then it could very well happen. Yeah. I mean, the power of belief is unbelievable, which is kind of funny to say. let's see here. Kenny told Brockton District Court that Judge Paula J. Clifford, the bodies of Edison Marlon Brito 8 and Lassan Brito 5 were found under bed covers in separate rooms in the family's third floor apartment on Prospect Street.
What?
Yeah, the mother went over to a neighbor's house and asked them to call an ambulance for herself. And the neighbor told police there were children in the home who would need to be cared for, too. So the mother didn't even say anything about their kids. She went over to the neighbor's house to have them call an ambulance for her. Wow. Ooh. Whoa.
Trying to...
When the neighbor led an officer into the apartment, they found Larson under a blanket, his neck bandaged and face slashed, court documents save. Edison's head and torso were covered with sheets, but his legs were exposed. Kenny said a preliminary autopsy revealed that he'd been stabbed 50 times in the neck, chest, and torso. Sanders admitted to the stabbing Edison first in the kitchen. She could not recall how many times she stabbed Lassan. Wow. I don't want to read any more, but this is What a crazy fucked up story, right?
Yeah.
But like voodoo, all about the ritual. I don't know what caused it, and doesn't necessarily really say, like, she doesn't say, like, why she did it. She just did it. And 50 wow. times. I don't know what she was trying to... it doesn't necessarily, like, say it, so she just said it was the voodoo stuff. So maybe she thought that she had a voodoo curse against her, and the only way was to murder her children to get off the... But I'd slit my own throat before I did anything to my children to get a curse off me. I understand voodoo and belief are big things, but man, come on.
That it's so brutal.
Unbelievable. I couldn't imagine being the first responders on that scene. I couldn't imagine any of that.
Is there any, like, I feel like if this was a horror movie that someone wanted to produce as a based on true story thing, I feel like if the first, 5 minutes of the film was, police camera going into, this building, or ambulance camera, whatever,
ugh.
I feel like it would be really scary.
It would be fucked up because you're these two little kids' bedrooms, or one bedroom and then one in the kitchen or whatever, but that's still, it's so crazy. Unbelievable, man.
It's twisted. Ugh. Bloody twisted.
Hey, this is the darker side.
Yeah, right.
That's what we do. I mean, we give our opinions. I do want to throw up at the thought of these little kids, this blood everywhere. But, you know, I mean...
Covered in blanket sheets.
This is the world we live in, man. So you got a news story for us there, bro? Foray asked?
Yes, I actually do. Let's see here. It's I'm a huge favorite of, really... fucked up shit, whether it's supernatural or whatever, but I trembled over the story, and this would probably be the least of my interest, to be honest, or at least not really that much up there, but I read it and I was like, I gotta do this. This is fucked up. So according to Up Story, an attacker throws animal semen over girls in Bury. CCTV image of the man police are looking for, hold on a second. Detectives in the Greater Manchester describe the assaults all in the Bury area as disgusting. The man follows young girls before they discover they have been smeared with the liquid.
Ugh. What kind of semen is this?
Let's see here.
So he just runs up to him and then... just covers them with semen? And does he walk away, run away?
Let me see here.
Doesn't really say much after that.
It said the first attack was reported in November, and the latest was last week of when this was written. None of the... they weren't... let me see here. I know it says it in here somewhere. They don't really explain it. They just say he's not necessarily connected to all the incidents, but we would like to speak to him. First victim, 14-year-old girl, was followed by a man on Candy Drive in Unsworth, I'm guessing the UK, on the 13th of November. When she got home, she noticed a sticky liquid on her thighs. The substance was analyzed by police and later identified as animal semen.
Oh, okay, so it wasn't his semen. It was, but what are you getting out of
animal semen?
But physically accosting these women and then basically just smearing them with animal semen. What causes you to do something like this as a human being?
I have no fucking idea.
I mean, is he like going home to circuit? You know, to secretly jerk off afterwards? Like, I got these girls with this semen. Now I'm so revved up and hot, I gotta do some nasty stuff to myself now. Like, what are you getting out of that? What are you getting out of that action? It makes no sense to
Supposedly, the man, another victim, 14-year-old girl, was in a shop in the town of Bury, in the center, with her mother, when a man bumped into her and wiped a white substance on her bottom.
Wow. I don't get it. I mean, I get it. I get that they're fucked up sexually deviant. Like, you know, there's a level. I mean, going crazy and having fun with sex is fine. But to the point where you have to, like, go out into the public, put animal semen on your hand, rub it on a girl's bum to get you off, or to just freak out people. I mean, it's either, like, you're going for that the fear factor, like just gross, ugh, factor.
Yeah.
Or you're a fucked up, crazy sexual person, like, who's gonna go home now and masturbate to the fact that you rubbed animal semen on a girl's butt. A 14-year-old girl, too. Because it seems like he has a modus operandi of wiping these substances on younger 14-year-old teenage girls.
Yep, wait till you hear this. In their latest attack, on the 25th of January, a man approached two girls aged 15 and 16 in Whitefield and asked them the time. One of the girls then noticed liquid dripping from her skirt.
And it wasn't hers.
He has thought at each incident, the offender was described as being a white man aged between 25 and 35 and was carrying a bag.
Of course, because that's where he keeps his animal semen. Fucking cow cum, dude. It's gross. Oh, man. Again, this is the world we live in. Like, these are the things that we have this podcast for, to bring this type of ridiculously disgusting, interesting news to people around the world.
I felt gross just reading it.
Well, of course. I would have, too. Oh, yeah. For sure. All right. Well, we're going to head over to our creepypasta corner.
Hell yeah.
We're going to read you a creepypasta here. I found it's quite fitting. It's quite good.
Get ready.
It'll make you think.
Get ready, guys.
Y'all ready to get creepypasta'd? Some spooky linguine?
I'm not ready.
You're not ready? You don't like the creepypasta?
I love it, but it gives me the crazy feeling sometimes.
Yeah, like the last one I read, I got the chills. This is funny. But this one's called Hide and Seek. It's a short one, but it's a fun one. You ready?
Oh, yeah. Kinda.
My son and I often play games. He's 5 years old, so our games can range from pirate battles in the middle of the ocean to simple board games like Snakes and Ladders. Today we decided to play Hide and Seek. I counted to 50, while he went to hide in one of the three hiding places that he always picks. Ready or not, here I come, I called, as I slowly made my way to the sofa. I looked down, and there he was, two little feet sticking out from behind the sofa, accompanied by muffled laughter. "Oh, I can't find you anywhere," I exclaimed, knowing that the idea that he hidden well would cause him to jump out of the hiding place in excitement. "Right," I said, "time for bed." As I tucked my son into bed and kissed him goodnight, a small figure appeared in the bedroom door. "Mommy," it whispered, "you didn't come to find me."
What the fuck? What?
So, what happened is that she found her son under the couch with his feet dangling out, and she tucked her son into bed. But it wasn't her son. The little boy who came to the door and said, "Mommy, you didn't find me," was her son.
What?
So it's either like a doppelganger or some sort of like creature. Shapeling or a fairy folk or something like that. But I mean, can you imagine? I mean, that's like one of my worst nightmares, is to have... My son's already creepy, and to have another version of him that's even more creepy just the thought of it. I mean, I like the darkness and I like the creepiness, but not when it comes to kids, like kid stuff, kid movies, like horror movies involving kids are crazy, and creepy pasta like this involving kids is so...
It's so creepy.
Okay, I got the chills, and I've read it like 4 or 5 times, and I still get the chills every time I read that story. It's crazy.
Oh my god.
Because I can only imagine if it was me.
Right.
But especially when you're reading it in the dark and your kid's already asleep and you think you see something out of the corner of your eye.
Yeah. Oh my god.
God, I love that.
That's so fucked
up. I love that.
So my question would be, though, is does the mother know, or is she possessed, or is she just ignoring it?
Well, she didn't know that she was tucking in her kid until her real son showed up at the door and said, "Mommy, you didn't find me."
So maybe she kind of saw it in her head that it was her son?
Yeah, I mean, it could have been any type of creature, like a changeling, or like something posing to be her child, like a demonic figure or something, but like was corporal at the same time. Because she obviously had to pick him up, put him in the bed, change him, put his, you know, but still just, and then like your son coming back into the room and going, "What are you doing? You didn't come find me. What the hell?" And then you're like, "Oh my God, that's my kid. Who the fuck did I just put in the bed?"
Right?
You know? It's so funny.
Can you imagine, like, reporting that to the police?
No, because they wouldn't believe a goddamn second of it.
No, they would just probably recommend her some hospitals to go to.
What are you talking about? Because obviously this other thing or this other creature is going to disappear by that point.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're looking at it from, like, a movie or a show type of format, you know, to create tension and psychoticness and psychosis in the mother and stuff like that.
I can't imagine like how that figure might have also felt like if it were to get changed.
Right. Right. You know. All right. So that's enough of the creepypasta, I think.
Yeah.
You know. So we're gonna do our movie review. A dark, sad movie review. And
hell yeah.
This week we have chosen. It's a Netflix original, right? The Ritual?
I believe so.
Yeah, so Netflix original, The Ritual. Staying on topic with rituals, did that new story about the voodoo rituals. Yeah. Got a movie here called The Ritual. Now, this movie first aired in the UK on October 13th in 2017. It is directed by David Bruckner. The screenplay is by Joel Barton, and the story was written, it was based off a novel by Adam Neville. This movie got 71% on Rotten Tomatoes, and 6.3 on the IMDb's. Avaris, what do you think about this movie? I mean, starting right from the beginning, what was your first thoughts, that opening scene? Did you think it was going to play into the rest of the movie? I mean, obviously it was going. It was going to be one of the reason that the next part of that movie happened.
Right.
But I didn't think it was going to be that rich. I mean, I thought it was going to play into him, how he was as a human being.
Right.
You know, when his friend, you know, spoilers, people, but.
Spoiler.
Some fucked up shit happens in the beginning, and it makes this the main character. Who's already, I think, got, like, a weak self-esteem. He's a weak person. He's not that strong. He's, you know, he obviously wasn't that strong in the first scene of the movie. But it just eats at him more and more to where right after that first initial sequence, when they go into 6 months later in the woods of Sweden.
Yeah, I didn't even expect them to cut to that.
They're hiking through the hills of Sweden.
Yeah.
Because they were planning on a trip before, but you know, their friend, whatever. So, from there, what did you think of that?
I was just like,
but still, I was still lost. I mean, like, I didn't know what the hell was going to happen in this movie.
No, the mystery factor on that first beginning part of the movie was, I didn't really expect it to mean too much. And it actually made me think, well, is this movie really going to be more like a horror thriller if it's starting like this? It made me think, wow, like, if it's starting like this, you know, they're definitely putting more emphasis on character development. So I had a feeling after that scene that the movie was definitely going to be good at, like, to some extent.
Yeah, I mean, I think they spent maybe a little bit too much time on that one guy who was beating up his friend, you know, mentally and verbally.
Yeah.
The guy with the glasses on. I think they might have spent a little bit too much time. And they did, I guess, do a decent job of developing the characters in that probably 15 minutes of...
It's crazy. What just came up in my head right now was that the first, like, 10... Not even. It was, like, the first 10 or 5 minutes of the movie, came up, and it kind of applies to how things went down in the woods.
Right. So, I mean, it is a little foreshadowy in that respect. You kind of see who these characters were in that first 5-minute sequence, then the way they were in leading up to the woods, and then even more so in the woods.
And it gets, like, right down to business. Like,
right, I mean, there's probably, like, another 5 minutes of them just complaining on the mountainsides and just, blah, 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 we're friends, we've been friends forever, fucking suck because, you know. It's a guy film up to that point.
It totally is a guy film.
I mean, and through the whole thing, it basically is, too. But then once they get in the woods, things start to escalate fast. Like, fast.
Very, very, very.
Like, that first night lost in the woods when they get to the cabin.
Yep.
The fucking end of that scene, I was like, what happened to all of these people?
When they go up to the attic, I was just like, oh, my God. Well, not an attic, you know. It's like a second floor
or right.
crawl space. They went up there, and I was just like, holy fuck. Like, what are they messing with?
And I think the movie at this point, all the way up to this point, is still getting good and good and good and good. Until they leave that place, and then they're being chased.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can see the monster every once in a while. You get a glimpse of it. There's a cool couple jump scares in this, and up to this point.
You can't even tell it's fake. Like, that's the one thing that I was, like, realizing, like, throughout the first half of the movie. I'm like, this looks freaking real.
Yeah.
And, it's like... The shots they get whenever you see, like, that little tiny glimpse of the monster, it's, like, kind of like what you would see on the corner of your eye type of deal.
In the woods, especially in that deep of a woods. I mean, it's a pine wood up in Sweden, and it's thickly, 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 you know, inhabited with the pine trees and the deciduous evergreens up there. But, yeah, I mean, as it gets deeper and deeper, and then all of a sudden, it gets real intense.
Yeah.
After they leave, they're getting basically hunted by this monster thing. And then people start to die off.
Yeah.
Like in any horror movie, this is how it's going to happen. And at
things go sour
very. Yeah, and I mean, and then they get to this village, so to speak. This fucked up village.
Yeah.
And you don't know anything until, like, almost to the very end of the movie, what the hell's happening?
Literally the last 35 minutes, I didn't even realize was coming at all. I didn't see it coming.
I didn't either. But here's the thing. When I did,
yep.
I was fucking pissed.
Really?
Oh my God. Yeah, I was mad. I didn't like the ending of this movie. Some people may really enjoy it, but I was... The payoff made me want to throw shit at my TV. And I don't like to think about throwing shit at my TV because I like my TV.
See, I have a way different opinion on that than you do.
It didn't scare me enough. It disappointed me.
See, like, the thing is with this film was that it was more like the first 3/4 of the film were, like, the scare, you know, were there to scare you, then the last 30 or so minutes was kind of like this big, just weird, odd, scientific, maybe like historical backstory that you wouldn't even see coming, and it's just wild.
Well, I mean, I get that whole point, that whole part of it where it's, you know, it brings in the mythology and the people, and yeah, I mean, the village, who they are and how they got to be there and who, you know, how they became that village.
Yeah.
Based on the monster. I mean, it all comes down to the monster.
Exactly. Everything.
But when I found out what the monster was, and then the very end of the movie, the fucking very end of the movie. Yeah.
I know what exactly you're talking about.
The very end.
Yeah.
When he triumphantly wins the day after just being brutally beaten and just mentally mind-fucked the entire time.
Yep.
When he wins the day. And the way they do it, I didn't like the way it was filmed. I didn't really like the way it was directed. I didn't like the two, him and the other the monster, they're off.
It looks real,
like,
though.
I was just like, get the fuck out of here.
I'm not gonna lie, the monster looked pretty insane and didn't look too fake. I mean, that's what I thought. I think.
Well, I mean, the visuals and the stuff like that, but I still just don't like the concept of it.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
You know, I just think that they overstretched a little bit. How this creature became in existence? Yeah, if you look into the mythology and everything, yeah, this could have happened. This could be one of the offspring of one of the Norse gods. Whatever. Yeah. I'm gonna ruin it. That's a spoiler, people. It's a fucking demigod whose bloodlust keeps this village of crazy people alive.
Yeah.
It was a stretch for me. It was a stretch. And then, again, the way it was directed, and I just didn't like the end of the movie at all.
See, I'm not going to lie. Like, I actually thought the movie was just, in my opinion, underrated. I felt like the ratings were actually a little bit lower than they should have been.
Really? So you're going to give it high marks.
Yeah.
Sorry. So let's get to that point of this movie review where let's give it our four words, our best review in four words, and then we'll give it a grade afterwards. So your four words to best say what you liked about the movie.
Four words. Let's see here. Extremely, awesomely, weirdly unpredictable.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Mine is are you kidding me? That's how I felt. I felt like I was taken for a ride.
It is a roller coaster.
I paid for everything and nothing for a payoff. I didn't feel good at the end of that movie.
I'm not going to lie. I think the whole everything leading up to the end, the whole overnight factor, and then he runs out and the sun's coming up or whatever.
Yeah.
I feel like they were just trying to be realistic when it comes to hours of nighttime, mm-hmm. hours of daylight. And I thought that was pretty cool. But the one thing that I thought was interesting was everything you see in the trailer, well, at least the one that I watched that they first came out with, everything you seriously see in that trailer is in the first maybe 25 minutes. That's it.
Yeah.
After like that half hour, you're just like, what's going to happen now? Like,
which, I mean, I mean, it was marketed well that way. They leave you a lot of suspense.
Yeah.
You know, they just tell you that it's like this film.
I was a little confused, though.
I liked a little bit of the ending because I liked that he did get through all of this.
And the guy who kind of, the guy, what's his name? The guy with the glasses? He kind of foresaw this. So him telling him that he's going to get out of here and he's going to, and to burn this motherfucking place to the ground. I just thought that was not actually going to happen. I thought the complete opposite was going to happen. And the fact that guy with the glasses, what's his name, was right. Just like, it blew me away. I was just like, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't see it.
Yeah.
Because every little moment in every act structure of this film.
Well, I did see it. Right. And I felt like I knew the next step, and I knew what was going to happen. I mean, the only one twist was the Norse god thing for me.
Yeah.
But it made sense with his powers and the powers that he had. And his bloodlust and stuff like that. It made sense to me.
Right. And the thing that did aggravate me throughout the whole film was the fact every little hope that they got and pointed out throughout the film, they end up getting to where they want to go. Where there's this little tiny shiny thing of hope that they have, and every single time it's the complete opposite times like a million.
Right.
and I was just blown away a little bit. But towards the middle to the end of the movie, I was a little confused. I was like, what the hell is going on? I didn't even really understand how I felt at the time. And then I kind of did a little more research and stuff, and then I kind of rewatched that last half of the film, and I was just like, well, I think I appreciate this a little more than I think I actually thought first.
So what would you give it on your scale?
I'd give it, let's see here, maybe out of 10, I'd give it maybe like an 8.5 out of 10.
Interesting.
For sure.
Yeah, I would give it. I'd give it like a C plus out of 3 bajillion Jemeckles.
So I guess that's a pretty. That's
it's a C plus. I'm giving it a C plus.
That's not bad.
No, I don't. I don't. Hard C plus too.
Right.
No B minus. Not even on the just a hard C plus.
Yep.
Yeah.
I can see what you're saying.
No, but I can see where you're coming from too. So I might have to go back and rewatch it and
right.
hit it from that type of perspective.
I feel like if I were to make a comment towards like IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes, I would say they're a little bit under.
Yeah, you think so?
A little bit under, especially IMDb.
Well, IMDb's hard on everybody, man. They're hard on the great ones too.
Yeah, you're right.
All right, hey, you ready to dive deeper into the darker side?
Yeah.
This is our big story segment.
Hell yeah.
It's called Diving Deeper into the Darker Side. This little segment is, let's dive into a bowl of cereal. Killer.
Fucking A, man.
So our first serial killer episode, we're going to cover a gentleman by the name of Dennis Rader.
Uh-oh.
A.K.A. the BTK killer. Now, Forrest, do you know what BTK stands for?
Oh, man. Let's see here. I know I fucking had my head not long ago. oh, man. I'm trying to think of it right now.
I'll tell you. It's bind, torture, kill.
Shit.
So he really enjoyed that method of murdering people. We'll get a little bit deeper into that. So let me give you a little background on this gentleman. Dennis L. Rader was born March 9th, 1945. So his birth anniversary just happened a few days ago.
Holy fuck.
To William E. and Dorothea Rader, one of four boys. He was actually the eldest of four boys. He graduated from Heights High School in 1963. Rader served in the U.S. Air Force from 1966 to 1970. He was stationed in Turkey, Greece, Japan, and South Korea since about 1971. He lived at 6220 Independence in Park City. Let's see here. In 1971, Rader worked in a meat department at Leakers IGA, where his mother worked. His mother got him a job after he got out of the military. In 1971, he married Paula Dietz, a 1966 graduate of Heights, the same high school that he had gone to. She had been working as a secretary at the VA hospitals. In between 71 and 73, he attended Butler County Community College in El Dorado. So, I mean, he seems like a very normal guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's getting his stuff. He did the military and everything else like that.
Ooh.
You know. Let's see here.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, if you go back into his early story, he, at a very young age, had been thinking about binding and torturing and killing things.
Oh.
As a kid. As like an 18-year-old kid. I mean, as an 8-year-old kid, he was already killing and stringing up animals. So, I mean, he had the precursors of this at a young age. But like most of these serial killers, you don't necessarily see that they're going to be a serial killer because they kind of live a a normal life to hide the fact that they have these fucked up points of view.
Could be your neighbor.
Could be. He very well could be. And that's could very well be your neighbor. And I mean, you never know. It's always the way it is. It just, it happens
that
way.
Your street, my God, your block.
So in 1974, Raider finally gets to the point to where he's ramped up his feelings, his thoughts, his want, his drive, his need to do this deplorable thing. Gets to a point where he actually acts on it. So his first victims, Raider's first victims were four members of the Otero family, a Wichita family that included the father, Joseph, Julie, the mother, Josephine, who was 11 years old, Joseph Jr., 9 years old. And on that day, January 15th, 1974, 29-year-old Raider, he was 29 years old at the time, cut the phone lines to this family's house and forced his way inside, and using a gun, he had rounded up all the family. At that time, after he'd got them all rounded up, he tried to systematically suffocate the Otaros by placing a plastic bag over their head. And while this method did work, it worked on the father and the son, so Joseph Sr. and Joseph Jr. It didn't work so well with Mrs. Otero or the daughter, Julie. The daughter, Josephine. Mrs. Otero was Julie. Josephine was the 11-year-old. So Raider had to then, or BTK had to then strangle the mother. She had to physically kill her by wringing her neck. So he choked her out.
Wow.
Which is part of the torture. I mean, obviously having, he bound the family up, tortured them with, you know, suffocation. And when he failed to suffocate Josephine, the daughter, as well, he took the 11-year-old girl to the basement and hanged her from the drainage pipe in the basement. That girl, Josephine, was his primary target in that. He didn't necessarily want to kill the entire family, and he didn't even necessarily know that he was going to get to that point.
Wow.
But in most of these serial killers, they have this point where they get to, they act on it, and they're like, well, I'm not necessarily going to finish this, or I'm not going to follow through, but they do, and they do it hard.
Yep.
And that's the point where they get their first kill, human kill. And at that point, they've got this thirst for it. But the younger girl was the primary target. He said that she cried for her mother as she futilely fought to breathe, while the killer, BTK, masturbated to her suffering. Later that day, 15-year-old Charlie Otero, the only surviving member of that family, discovered their bodies as he arrived home from school that afternoon.
Wow.
You imagine that? So he killed off four people in his first killing. Now he has 10 killings under his belt.
Yeah.
So that was in January of 74. In April of 74, April 4th, 1974, he struck again. So usually it doesn't escalate that fast in regards to serial killers. Maybe there'd be a little bit longer wait between one and two, right, and then it'll escalate after that as the fury and stuff. But so he just had this sickness and wanted to get into it.
Oh, shit.
So a couple months later, 3 months almost to the day.
Wow.
Raider broke into the home of 21-year-old Catherine Bright. He hid in her bathroom until she arrived home at 2 p.m. She was accompanied by her 19-year-old brother, Kevin. They were both taken by surprise when a man came out of the room with a large gun. Using the same methods that he had done before on the Oteros, he bound Catherine in her bathroom. Her brother Kevin was taken to another room, where he was bound with items found in the room. Raider tried to strangle Kevin using a stocking. Why not? It's on the floor. Just, oh, look, I'll use that to strangle this poor child. Because I'm a sick fucker.
Wow.
You know?
Oh, my God.
Kevin was able to get loose and grabbed Raider's gun. Kevin fought with Raider, but he was shot twice in the head and face during the struggle. The funny thing is about Kevin, though, is he survived that. But he wasn't able to, like, identify Raider at all.
Wow.
So, I mean, he survived that one.
What a trooper.
The sixth victim was in March of 77. So this was 74 to 77. So that's 3 years pass.
Wow.
So, like, he got a little bit of his little kill juice out for those two giant explosions of murder fest that he did within that first 3 months of first killing somebody. So he waited another 3 years for his sixth victim. Shirley Vane was her name.
Sixth victim?
This is his sixth victim because, again, the first killing was four people.
Four.
Fifth victim was Catherine Bright. Sixth victim is a woman by the name of Shirley Vane. In March of 77, Raider allegedly cased two different women's homes but found both to be empty. Canvassing the neighborhood on foot and posing as a detective, Raider approached a five-year-old boy and showed him a picture of his own wife. He asked the boy if he had seen her. After answering no, Raider tailed the boy back to his house. Raider knocked on the door and was allowed entry by the three children of the home, the oldest of which was an eight-year-old. Raider proceeded to draw the shades and turn the television when suddenly the mother, 24-year-old Shirley Vane, entered the room in her bathrobe. Raider barricaded the children in the bathroom. So he had put the children in the bathroom after she got out.
Wow.
He bound Shirley Vane like he normally does and strangled her to death with a cord.
Oh, jeez.
Detectives later found seminal evidence near the victim, so he must have masturbated as he strangled her, as she was strangling and losing breath. And
fucking A, man.
So these four children were in the bathroom while their mother is being strangled out in the living room. And then this crazy nut job is nutting all over the floor while she gets strangled.
Oh, my God.
And the whole time, this man is a community person. He's building himself in his church. He's got all these
church. Oh my
great
God.
Positions. He, you know, he's working for these companies. He's got a normal life. He's got a wife.
Yep.
And he is just out of his mind crazy. So, it looks like, so in December of, 77, his next victim. So he waits a good, almost 8 months for that.
Okay.
For his next victim, which would be his seventh victim, Nancy Fox. So December of that year, Raider also targeted Nancy Fox, a single 25-year-old woman who worked at a jewelry store. She was a jewelry store clerk.
Yeah.
Raider gained entrance to her empty apartment through the bedroom window. He severed the phone lines like he normally does in these situations if he has access to them. When she entered her apartment, she found him armed inside the apartment, and she didn't resist. She did what she said. What he said. Obviously, you mean he's got a gun to her head.
Yeah.
You do what you got to do to survive. Unfortunately for her, she didn't know that she wasn't going to survive. So he bound her to the bed. He made her disrobe, get naked, bound her to the bed. After she was tied up, he explained to her that he was the man who had committed the recent murders and announced that she was his next victim. Can you imagine that?
Oh my god.
Semen was left on the nightgown next to the body.
Holy shit. I can't imagine being in her shoes, too. Like, you'd think at least for her resisting, he would maybe, like, half kill her. Be like, hey, you were good. your surprise for me now is I'm finished and done, and I'll let you live, but you probably have to go to the hospital or something.
No.
Fucking A.
No, you gotta kill him. I mean, he had to.
Yeah.
But he was getting cocky at this point.
Can't break the rules, I guess, right?
No. In 85, so that was what, in 77 that he did that? So he waited a few years. He went like 13 years.
Wow.
No, he went 7 or 8 years without killing.
They haven't caught this guy yet?
Not at this point. Not in 84, they still haven't killed. They haven't caught him. But he's like, he's getting cocky and, you know, they're trying to get a database of DNA, because DNA back in 84 was starting to become a thing that they could use.
Mm, yep.
But in 85, he struck again on April 27th, 1985. His eighth victim, Marion Hedge, was killed. He was attending this Boy Scout, because he was also a Boy Scout leader, with his son. So he is a kid. So he's attending this Boy Scout thing with his son. And at the end of the day here at this camp out, he stated that he had a headache. And basically got away from this retreat. So he's basically already knows that he's going to go kill this woman. Raider chose to visit Marianne Hedge, a 53-year-old neighbor who he had lost, who had lost her husband about a year prior. So he knows this woman, but he has this alibi because he's at this. After so many years, he knows that he wants to kill this woman, probably because he thought that she was the right kill, because she's lonely, alone, and that he could have gain access to her house. After stopping for a beer and leaving his car at the bowling alley, Raider took a cab to Park City to the home of Marion Hedge. Raider severed the phone lines like he normally does. He entered the house but found no one home. He decided to hide in the bedroom, because he's got a thing for hiding in bedrooms as well.
Ugh.
And watched as Marianne and a male friend entered the home several hours later. He waited patiently until the friend left about 1 in the morning, when Marianne, it's M-A-R-I-N-E,
Marianne,
turned out the night, the light, and went to bed. Raider then crept out of the closet and turned on the bathroom light. Without hesitation, he jumped onto the woman and strangled her in her bed. He, I guess, dragged the body along with the bedding to her car and placed her in the trunk. He took the body to the church he attended and dragged Maureen's lifeless body into the basement of the church.
Wow.
Then he proceeded to tape black plastic over the windows and then posed the body in various positions and finally took pictures. I mean, he's getting cocky. He's like, I'm never going to get caught. I'm going to do all these things. He's just crazy, man. He's just a crazy, crazy nut job.
Yep.
Unbelievable. Crazy. So this was in 1985 that he had did that. He hit again in 86, in September of 86. His eighth victim, or ninth victim, I should say, was Vicky Wergel, who was a 28-year-old. In September of 86, he arrived at her doorstep dressed as a telephone repairman. So, I mean, he's really getting cocky now.
Phone repairman.
Yeah. Apparently, fooled by the ruse, she allowed Raider into the home. Raider then proceeded to tie her up, strangle her, and take photos of her body.
Wow.
Just escalation. He's just, you know, bringing it to a whole new next level. I guess her husband, Bill Wergel, observed his own car going in the opposite direction when he returned home a short time later. Upon entering the house, he found his wife behind the bed on the floor. He called 911. Paramedics rushed Vicky to the hospital but weren't able to retrieve her. Bill Wergel faced an uphill battle when police decided that it was not the BTK crime and pursued Bill as a suspect for several years. Fortunately, he was never formally charged with the crime.
What?
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy, right? Like,
what the fuck?
But I mean, this man, Raider, BTK, is getting crazy And this whole time, all this stuff is happening. All these newer ones. He's sending letters to the press. He's taunting the police.
Wow.
Because they really want to find him. And then all these long breaks, people are like, "Oh, well, we, you know, BTK's gone. BTK's gone. We can relax." Then all of a sudden, he snaps again a few years later. But he's like, get to this point where he's got. He thinks he's got the police by the balls. He thinks he's got the media at his beck and call. And he doesn't. Because, as we all find out, majority of these people who are serial killers are fucking idiots when it comes to,
yep,
to this stuff. So, in 1991... So, we go from 86 to 1991. In February... Ritter was 45 years old at this time in 1991 when sights fell on a woman by the name of Dolores Davis. She was a 60-year-old single woman. She lived alone about a half a mile from where he lived. Ritter planned his attack to happen during the next Boy Scout camp, again making a great,
yep,
making up an excuse to leave the camp, etc.
Alibi.
He headed back to his neighborhood. He used a cement block to smash his way through her glass door, the back of the house, found Dolores reading in bed. He fed her a line about being a vagrant and needed money. And then he tied her up in the bedroom before strangling her to death. After this, he made a sketch documenting the end of her life. He then dragged her body outside and placed it into the trunk of her car. He drove her car to a lake near the interstate and left the body and the other evidence under some trees. He later then returned to the scene of this one and wiped down the fingerprints he may have left, then retrieved his own vehicle, etc. He's got some balls.
Yeah,
big, you know, balls. He really does.
Big hairy balls.
I mean, just the audacity of this, and then the whole thing after this. This is where it really starts to escalate with the press and the news. And the police and everything else. So yeah. He kept leaving these packages with evidence and pictures and other things around, and people were finding them and then reporting them to the police. In 2004, a package was found out of Omni Center package Dropbox in North Kansas. Another package later on in 2004 containing Fox's driver's license, one of the persons he killed. He left her driver's license and a bound doll found in Murdoch Park were back in that day. So he left that evidence out for these people.
Wow.
In 2005, a news organization received a postcard detailing the location and contents of a post Toasties cereal box. It was found near the 69th North Seneca, I guess, which is in this main town. In February of 2005, this news organization received another postcard. Apparently it was from him.
Wait, 05, and he's still not caught?
No.
Holy
fuck. No, so, I mean, it took him three decades.
Wow.
To catch this guy. I mean, he was on the lam. That's why he's still one of the biggest murderers in this country. You know, I mean, that's why... eventually what happened is he ended up getting in a conversation with the police, and he got so cocky to the point to where he said, "I'll send you a floppy disk of information."
Yep.
And the cops were like, and he's asked the cops, "If I send you a floppy disk of information, are you going to be able to tell it was me?" And they tell him no. And he sends them a floppy disk of information with like pictures and everything else on it. But what he thought that he had did, he thought that he had wiped all clean. But what the cop ended up doing is finding evidence on this floppy disk of church documents deep embedded into this floppy disk with information in it, with his name on it, and they found it. They caught him through this stupid, cocky move.
Fucking dumbass.
That he had, because he was so cocky and thought he was on top of the world, yep, and was never going to get caught.
Do whatever the fuck he wants.
He got caught. Because he got so cocky. And good for him.
Yeah.
Because that's what you get.
Exactly.
That's what you get. So they ended up having a trial. He got convicted of all of these murders.
Good.
And he's And Rader plead guilty to 10 counts of first-degree murder in June 27th of 2005.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? Isn't that absolutely crazy?
Did someone kill him in prison yet?
Yeah, I don't... I'm not even 100% sure if he's dead or not. But we're talking... Wow. How many years is this? 74 to 2005. What's that? 31 years?
Yeah.
31 years? That's crazy. 31 yeah. years this killer was out there. 31 years. And it took him to get super cocky and, like, godlike. Like, this godlike mentality that he has about these... That it took him that long. And it was basically his demise that caused it to happen.
Wow.
He did it. He All right, Forrest. So, yeah, man. I mean, like I was saying, this is just... crazy how long it took them to really apprehend this gentleman. I mean, it's
bloody insane.
35, you know, I mean, what, 31 years, right? Total.
Yeah.
Between his first kill and
oh,
unbelievable. Like he was, like I said, he was apprehended in 2005, and as of right now, BTK Dennis Rader is currently serving 10 consecutive life sentences at El Dorado Correctional Facility in Kansas.
Wow.
So he's still alive. And I don't know how he's doing in prison. I'm sure he's doing wonderfully. Who knows? I mean, he's still there. He's still alive. And it's...
Wow.
2018, 13 years later, he's still living.
I was thinking throughout that whole segment, like, if he goes to fucking prison, someone's got to fucking stab him right where it hurts.
Oh, I'm something. Sure.
Shit.
I'm sure, dude. But, hey, that's the BTK killer. That's yeah. us taking a dive deeper into the darker side. Thank you for going along for that ride with us.
Thank you, guys.
Speaking of rides, we've got a little segment that I like to call Getting Lost in the Forest, or a.k.a. The Forest Fire. This right here is a segment where our passionate young Forest rants about a topic that is just chaping his butthole this week. Here you go, Forrest. You got 2 minutes.
Okay. Here, Forrest here. What's up, guys? Okay. So I'm going to just go over this little story real quick. So this year, Vice President Mike Pence's breakfast with the new Irish Prime Minister, Leo Varadkar, will be closed to the media at the request of the Vice President. In a departure from the recent past, reporters were told Friday's event to be attended by Pence and Varadkar will be private and the media won't be invited. Although last year, the Irish Prime Minister was welcomed by the U.S. President and Vice President with open arms and with open coverage by reporters ahead of the annual St. Patrick's Day festivities. So, let's see here. People are speculating whether issues such as gay and lesbian rights and Pence's stance on gay conversion therapy might be discussed at their meeting. For instance, the Human Rights Campaign, an LGBTQ civil rights advocacy group, sent a tweet saying ahead of his meeting with anti-LGBTQ Mike Pence's Ireland's openly gay Prime Minister, Leo Varadkar, said he wanted to bring up the LGBTQ rights at the meeting. And of course the media was, you know, banned from covering this event. Coincidence? I don't know. The media, however, will not be allowed inside the Vice President's residence to cover the breakfast. And according to an Irish Examiner, Varadkar said he would have preferred that his meeting with Pence would be open to the public, but added that a private session may allow for more frank conversation. Although I could not find updates on that specific conversation, who knows? They could have had sex. Who knows? I don't know.
He likes the gay conversion therapy a little too much, I think.
There's a lot, too. There's a lot. I have a video on YouTube. There's a lot going on with Mike Pence, with his stance on LGBT issues in America. LGBT plus, there's an acronym, in America. And I have to say that this really kind of pissed me off because our current government seems to be, I guess, you know, always crapping and shitting on the media. Liberal media, all this stuff. I think it's kind of bullshit because this is kind of a big thing. It's St. Patrick's Day weekend. This is a huge event. It's obviously from the past, it's been a tradition to always have the media welcomed mm-hmm. to these kinds of events.
Yeah.
And the fact that they said no media, to me, I mean, that sounds not just illegal, but it sounds just downright wrong in my opinion. And if you ask me, I don't believe at all that they spoke of any kind of LGBT issues whatsoever. And it pisses me off. It's like these, and the funny thing is that it got kind of a lot of attention, but not many people were talking about it. So it really kind of pissed me off, you know, like it really enraged me because there are still issues in this world. I mean, even in this country with LGBT issues, and it's just getting worse. And the fact that this just happened, I mean, that sounds pretty illegal, unconstitutional. I mean, extortion, I guess. I don't know. I don't like to throw that word out too much. But, like, I mean, it sounds to me like something that a government official could be prosecuted for. So.
And that's your two cents?
Yeah.
That's us getting lost in the forest.
You know,
think about that for a little bit, well, guys.
Please.
You know, it's again one of those issues, the darker issues that we deal with, the inequality and the unwillingness of some of these extremely religious persons not accepting people of any other type of faith or sexuality or,
yeah,
especially Mike Pence, who, man, there's a long backstory there.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna lie to you. I, even with the stance of Leo Varadkar, he.
He's confused. The Prime Minister of Ireland or Vice Prime Minister or something?
I believe so. I think he is a Prime Minister. Prime Minister.
And is he gay?
Yeah, he's gay.
He's openly gay?
Yep, he's openly gay.
And was he invited to this breakfast?
Yep.
Oh, okay, so he's there, but...
By Pence.
But he didn't want anybody in the news basically coming in and discussing that.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't want to discuss openly any type of LGBTQ plus issues to the media because of how deeply embedded he is in with his gay conversion community.
Yep. For like he likes to advocate for safe sex practicing pretty much.
Yeah, but gay conversion is his go-to.
Yep.
What a das. Whatever. Thank you for getting us lost in your mind for a few minutes here, Forrest. I appreciate that.
I could hear a little bit of anger in you.
Well, it's because Pence is a longer story, and maybe, you know,
there's a lot of things.
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on with that gentleman. I mean, if you like Pence, that's cool. But again, we're a little bit more open-minded here.
I fucking hate him.
In that regards, that's fine.
I hate him after doing some research on him the other day.
I'm sure we'll hear another rant somewhere down the line about Mike Pence or something that else that Trump is doing to the LGBTQ. Obviously, you have a vetted interest in that because you are a gay gentleman.
Yeah.
You are a male who likes other males.
Oh, yeah. The sausage.
You know, that's awesome, and I'm glad that you're very passionate about this. I am all as well. You know, this is an issue that America is dealing with on a daily basis and around the world as well.
Oh, yeah.
Where, you know, we're all equal until we're not all equal, and you know, it's not fair. Everybody should have the same rights regardless.
Oh,
if you're human, you have DNA and you have blood running through you should have the same rights
you're
as
alive.
Any other human with DNA and blood running through their body.
Yep.
Whether you believe in Satan, God, or nothing, or are gay, straight, or queer.
Yeah.
You know?
It's...
Everybody should have the same rights, bro.
And thing is, too, in some of these states, people still live there and pay taxes, and yet the states don't even support them.
Don't have any rights, yeah. They don't have the equal rights at all. Well, thanks, Forrest, for, again, opening us up to that and, you know,
Thank you.
Us lost in that little bit of who you are. That's one of my favorite segments.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, this is the Darker Side Podcast, everybody. This is where we delve into the darker things, the more gruesome, morose, macabre, the murders, the UFOs, the cryptids, the paranormal. This is what we do. This is the Darker Side. I am David Pottle. You can find me on the Facebooks. You can find me on Twitter if you really want to. I don't really go there much. I have a band called Frenemy. We are Frenemy Providence, a heavy metal band. It's cool. You can find us on Facebook, the other social medias. I also do another podcast with a gentleman called Kevin Spurl of, it's called Life, Relationships, and Everything in Between. At the end of this podcast, I'm going to give you a little clip of that, do a little cross promo with Kevin's podcast, where I am a freaking guest and co-host on that. Yeah. So that's where you can find me. That's who I am. Thank you guys for coming to the darker side. Peace and love to everybody. Forrest.
Yeah, and I would, I'd love to first say, you know, thank you guys for listening, and, you know, being a part of our very extremely, you know, dark type realm. And you can find me on YouTube, Forrest Smith, Forrest Films. I've been doing a couple recent videos if you'd like to watch it, mainly just political. You know, of course, Darker Side, you can find our production on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, you know, Podbean.
WordPress.
Yeah, WordPress, even SoundCloud, you can find that on there. Even Forrest Films, we're on Facebook too. You know, YouTube, all that crazy stuff. And yeah, I just want to say thank you guys. And, you know, it was a lovely time. Kinda. Very.
Yeah, as much as dark, disgusting, horrible things can be lovely.
Shaking a little bit.
Yeah, so... So until we hear, you know, until you hear from us again, guys, please, you know, stay good, stay pure, stay true.
Oh yeah.
Try to keep yourselves out of the darker side.
Yeah.
The darker side.
The darker side.
The darker side. 'Everybody, this is Dave from the Darker Side podcast coming at you. Right here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you or give you a clip of the other podcast that I frequent and co-host, Life, Relationships, and Everything in Between. You'll be able to find a link to this episode and to the iTunes page where you can like, share, subscribe, comment, do whatever you like. But here you go. This is with the host Kevin Spurl and I. We're talking about the pharmaceutical industry. It's a couple-minute clip here, everybody. Hope you enjoy it.
In this episode, in this topic of discussion for tonight, this is going to be a two-part series, actually. So tonight we're going to be talking about pharmaceutical industry as it pertains to and relates to the healthcare industry. And no taxation without representation is a good segue, because I don't see how, in a country as developed as ours, in a country where you have hundreds of millions of Americans who go to work hard every day in, day out, just to live paycheck to paycheck, people working 40, 50, 60 hours a week, and we're all literally just one health scare or medical condition away from bankruptcy and even potentially the grave.
Oh, yeah. 100%. In this country, it's well, you know, you get the people who are, we need a free market. We need to have an open market so that we can pick our own healthcare. And we need to, the only people who I see that are making this argument are people who, one, who already have or can afford healthcare. Mm-hmm. And two, the people who are given healthcare by the taxpayers, who are writing legislations to make profits off of these industries.
Right.
Those are the only people I'm saying that are making this argument. That and the libertarians. But they're libertarians, so, you know, we give them that,
but
that,
you know,
that little space there.
My position might be a little bit far-fetched, but I feel like if you have ever worked a job and you look at your paycheck and you see things like FICA, you see things like Medicare, you see things like state income tax, you see things like Social Security, and you see things like unemployment. These things that come out of your paycheck that you have no control over, before you even see a dime of your hard-earned money, there are these deductions. And
yeah, 25% at that point.
Yeah, and I'll stipulate to the fact that, yes, a lot of the taxes that we do pay do contribute to the lifestyle that we as Americans are afforded. But let's be honest, a lot of it we never see. And I personally don't feel that anybody who works and who pays back into the government should ever have to worry about how they're going to pay for medication if they get sick, or how they're going to pay for glasses if their child needs, you know, a prescription for eyeglasses or contacts, or, you know, if something happens and you can't work and the healthcare, the...
All right, everybody, there you go. There's a clip from Life, Relationships, and Everything in Between. Hope you enjoyed that. Please, like I said, like, subscribe, share with your friends.